You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Lake Tahoe Basin is a particularly prime habitat for black bears, with lots of natural resources and easy access to high-calorie foods that people don't lock up. These smart and hungry wild animals often make their presence known by rummaging through trash cans and breaking into homes and vehicles. This means that bear encounters with people are pretty common, and in extreme cases, it can be dangerous or even deadly. Just last week, a South Lake Tahoe resident shot a young bear that had entered his home. He was cleared by wildlife officials for any wrongdoing. Human-bear interactions are going to continue to happen. So what can residents of and visitors to Tahoe do to minimize these negative wildlife experiences? In a moment, we'll be joined by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, which responds to these encounters. But first, Tuji Silch is an urbanized black bear expert who specializes in the South Lake Tahoe area. Tuji, as always, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always my pleasure.
Well, let's just start off with your background with Tahoe's urbanized bear population. How did you become an expert in this?
For about the first 18 years I lived here, you rarely saw bears around town. Somebody would report seeing a bear once a year, once every 2 years even, back in those days. And literally, I used to keep trash outside on the street and never put it inside and never had bears get into it. And I'm talking about the 80s into the 90s. And around the year 2000, things started changing a little bit. And what piqued my interest in this situation was we were out camping at Grover Hot Springs and a young bear came through the camp. And I had heard all these things, do this, don't do that, do this, do this. And so I walked it right out of the camp and I went, whoa. Wow, that was really interesting. It was amazing that bear responded that way to me. And I didn't know anything about bears at that point. But it changed something in my brain because it made me want to know more and more and more. But that just kind of snowballed. And once people found out that I was willing to do that, people started asking me for help. So I started doing a lot of aversions and evictions, getting bears off people's property. And then because of my job working for the county in vector control, I'm walking outside in the stream zones every single day. So I'm around a lot of wildlife all the time. So I started learning more and more. I learned about where they bed down in the summertime. You know, in the wintertime, it's called denning, right? And they're in one spot generally. So here in town, it's usually under houses and places like that. But during the rest of the year, in spring, summer, and fall, it's called day bedding. And they'll bed all kinds of different places. One day they might bed under a deck. The next day they're out in the forest at the base of a tree. But I started learning to read all these signs. You know, it was like there was a secret language hidden out there in the forest that I wasn't recognizing until my eyes were opened a little bit. I'm not a wildlife biologist, obviously, and I like to point that out. I'm a local resident that just I'm so fascinated with our wildlife and specifically our black bear population, which really means studying our urbanized black bears because really that's what we have. And now in this situation, we're here in South Lake Tahoe and the Lake Tahoe Basin, we probably have the highest black bear population density on the planet, right? And if we don't have the highest black bear population density, it's second to the black bear population density in the Smoky Mountains. And places like Asheville, North Carolina, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and those areas are having the same exact issues we're having. Also in Colorado, you know, here in California, Mammoth. And now you're seeing it on the Western Slope. You're seeing this urbanization of these black bears. And especially as we keep encroaching into wildland habitat, black bears are extremely intelligent. They're opportunistic feeders, so they can eat a lot of different types of food sources and survive. And they're highly adaptable. So black bears are a species that actually do kind of well when we encroach, right? Some species, it puts them on the brink of being eradicated completely. Well, raccoons, coyotes, and black bears, all three of those species share those three common traits. And that's why they tend to do so well when we urbans encroach on their wildland habitat.
Yeah. This time of year, you mentioned, denning season is already in the past. We're at the end of spring. What's typically happening this time of year? Are there more young bears out?
Well, that's an excellent question because it's a very dynamic time of year right now. So we have sows with their newborn cubs of the year, right? Now, all black bear cubs of the year are born within about the same two-week period. They're born at the end of January, beginning of February. So we always call them, they're always the same age. We don't say, oh, that one's one and that one's one and a half. They're not. They're all the same age. So we've got moms with their cubs of the year. that are starting to disperse through the environment. In other words, they're moving farther and farther away from where she gave birth to those cubs. As a matter of fact, they're probably nowhere near the birthing den anymore. They're out and about because those cubs are pretty mobile and can move along with mom. Also right now is the time of year within the last month when black bear sows kind of kicked their yearling cubs to the curb, right?
And those are young bears. They're about one or 2 years old?
Well, they're generally between 15 and 17 months old when she cuts them loose. Because the third dynamic thing that's happening right now, as I'm speaking, is mating season. So the females with yearlings, they cut them loose. So they'll go back into estrus so they can mate during this mating season that lasts from, kind of mid-May into July, right? It's about a two-month period. It doesn't mean that mating won't happen beyond that, but the majority of mating happens in pretty much June, right? There's some peripheral stuff. So those three things are happening right now. So there's a lot of movement around the environment. There's a lot of people that are seeing younger bears, and I'm getting calls. I'm sure Fish and Wildlife's getting calls about, there's a young bear, and I'm worried about it because it doesn't have its mother nearby. Well, it's supposed to be by itself right now. That's the natural order of things.
I mean, it is quite a dynamic time. I mean, when talking about the circle of life that's happening this month, from letting go of yearlings to mating season to having the young bear cubs get out of their birthing den and move further away out. When it comes to those yearlings, though, I mean, they're learning how to navigate independently for the first time. And unfortunately, something tragic happened last week in South Lake Tahoe, which I know that you're well aware of. A resident shot and killed a young bear that was on their property. Wildlife officials cleared the person of any wrongdoing, but it has sparked a heated debate about what to do in these situations. What is important for people to know?
Well, this situation's a little more unique. You know, that resident didn't just shoot that bear on his property. It was in his house, and it wouldn't go out of his house. He was yelling and screaming at it, trying to leave, and he had his dog, who is a senior dog, his older dog, moves pretty slowly, was right there. And this young bear, this yearling bear, was starting to show some, it's called defensive aggression. It really isn't so much offensive aggressions, but it's very hard for people to understand the difference in the moment, and was showing signs of aggression towards the man and his dog. And he felt threatened, and he felt his dog safety was threatened as well. And he is a hunter. He does keep loaded weapons in his house for safety. And so he got the gun and he shot the bear twice inside his kitchen. And then the bear, he didn't outright kill it, and it went out in his backyard, climbed a tree, then fell down the street. And then the third time he shot it, when it was in the backyard and maybe witnesses saw, he was putting it out of its misery. I mean, it was suffering and he didn't want that to happen. He had compassion for that animal. He feels horrible about it. I mean, I'm one of the first people he called after the situation. The very first people he called was 911. He reported the incident himself. And contrary to a lot of the social media posts that are going on around it, nobody witnessed the event. It's a complete physical impossibility because his backyard has a 6-foot fence all the way around it with a tree line all the way around it, so no neighbors can see into his yard from his house. And if you're standing in his backyard, you can't see into his kitchen. So there is no way. So when it comes to these situations, had he shot that bear, if the bear was walking away from him down the street, or he shot the bear in his driveway, I'd have a different story to tell here. And I've kind of gone out on a limb to try and calm all this down. I've written an editorial. I put posts on social media, because when these things happen, facts don't really tend to matter a whole lot to some folks. And then you end up with passion and pitchforks, right? Let's get them, hang them up. Well, but they don't know the whole story. And my line, my red line in the sand for human bear conflicts, you know, that kind of get out of control, is bears that are willing to go into homes with people in them. This is a new phenomenon in the last so many years, right? It used to be that a bear would break into a house, they'd look for an open window or the slider not locked, and they'd open it and they'd smell. And they'd look, they'd smell, okay, no humans, I'm going there. We all know they have a sense of smell 7 times better than a bloodhound. They know if humans are present or not present. Well, the other part of this story is that yearling cub belonged to a family that was prolific at breaking and entering into homes in that area. I loaned out a number of electric mats to people that had that family break into their house and they were worried about coming back. I even got videos of them coming back and stepping on the electric mat and learning about electric mats. And this family was going into houses with people in them, with mom. It's a taught, learned behavior that happens. So already this young bear at 17 months old, 16 months old technically, was very habituated to humans. And that creates some really problematic situations. I don't want to call it a problem, but it can be problematic because there's absolutely no maliciousness on the part of the bear and the behavior the bear showed. It's just kind of going with the flow, especially with a young bear like that. Yearlings tend to be a little more standoffish to humans because they're trying to figure out the world out, right? They're trying to figure out, do I stand here? Do I not stand here? What do I do? So they can be a little harder to read. I know this because I study our bear populations. But to intimate that every single person on the planet living here in the South Lake, in the Lake Tahoe Basin, should know those facts, that's a big assumption to put. And that's a big onus to put on those people. So in my world, I like to try and have compassion for the bears in the human-bear conflict issues, but I also try and have compassion for the people that end up becoming, it's not really becoming a victim, but they end up in unintended situations that they didn't ask for.
How common or rare is this, what happened last week?
Well, it's happened a couple times over the last few years. What people don't know here in South Lake Tahoe is that over the last two summers, we've had about half a dozen human bear physical interactions where, you know, people were scratched. I mean, physically touched inside their house by the bear. Any bear that's willing to go into a house has done it before. Like I said, it's a learned taught behavior. Wildland bears coming out of a wild environment into town would never even think about that because they've never learned it. It's not even part of their thought process. But our urbanized bears have become so habituated human, and they equate us with their food sources now, not us as their food source, but our food as their food source. They've become really complacent about being around us, so they'll put themselves into very dangerous situations. They don't know it's dangerous, because obviously it can be just more so dangerous for the bear than the human, because this young bear ended up dead. And it's sad for both parties. So I'm not really prone to blaming people and pointing fingers. The responsibility for this falls upon all of our shoulders. Yes, it's a human-caused problem, right? We've created the situations that have built up to this. But in a specific situation, it's hard to point your finger at a single person and single them out saying, they're horrible, they're bad, they don't know. And I say that because I crawled her houses with bears. You better know what you're doing. It's when you're in a tight situation with a wild animal like that, even, you know, everyone says, oh, black bears aren't dangerous. No, generally they are not dangerous, but they have the potential to be dangerous in the wrong situation. And again, no malice on their part. They're just doing what they do to either get out of a situation or survive. And for instance, last year on the Western Slope, they found a woman's body that a bear had been eating on, and they thought she had died natural causes, and the bear came in and ate it. Well, through a forensic pathology, they just put it out in the media 2 weeks ago. No, we figured it out. Bear killed her. That's the very first human ever killed by a black bear in the history of the state of California. That changes the dynamics of everything. Before, we could always say, I could always tell people, you really don't have to worry about black bears. They've never killed a human in California. They have in other states, right? But it's never happened here. Now, my biggest fear is it's a small, younger person that ends up, you know, in the bullseye for that situation. Again, if we keep seeing this population density grow, and it's not just growing here in the basin, it is growing in all of Lake Tahoe. We're going to see more and more of these issues, especially as the bears become more urbanized. And like I said, now they're ending up in places like Auburn, Nevada City, you know, down in the foothills, even down in Folsom. We've been dealing with this urbanized bear situation up close and personal for about 15 years now. But it's kind of a new phenomenon in a lot of places, and people are having to catch up. So again, the only species that can do anything to mitigate the human bear conflicts is we humans. The bears don't have that. They don't know that anything good, bad, or indifference happening. They're just basically following their nose. And when they learn new food sources, they're easier to get than their wildland food sources. They're all about it because they're that intelligent. It's a dynamic highly nuanced situation. There's no cut and dry to it as some people think there is. And that's what I try and bring in the work I do with educating people, whether it's educating young people and just talking about our bears, or talking to adults and talking about the urbanized bear situation and human bear conflict issues. The more education we have, and the more we all get on the same page, and especially the more we all have the faith in the agencies that are tasked with doing these jobs, the better it's going to work out for not just we humans in the community, but for the bears and the other wildlife in our community.
Well, Tuji, right? As always, your expertise and your message, thank you so much for it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And thank you for allowing me to share it with you and your listeners.
Tuji Silch is an urbanized black bear expert who specializes in the South Lake Tahoe area. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're learning how to minimize negative or dangerous experiences with urbanized black bears. Joining us now are Alexia Roning and Eric Kleinfelter. Alexia is a Tahoe bear specialist, and Eric is a senior environmental scientist and supervisor for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife North Central Region, which spans 17 counties in the state. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, Alexia, I want to start with you. I see you're in the field. Where are you?
I'm off Highway 80 in the close to Drum Four-Way Road.
What drew you to this line of work?
I studied wildlife biology in undergrad, and when I entered undergrad, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to be outside. And then I saw my roommate who was doing a degree in with wildlife biology, and I loved all of her classes and her coursework, so I jumped on that bandwagon.
What kind of calls do you normally respond to? I guess, what does your job entail?
I mostly focus just in the Tahoe area, but most of my calls are home invasions, bear home invasions, property damage, whether that be a vehicle or a house or a garage. Bears breaking into homes and cars.
Yeah. I know that there are a lot of moving parts and arms that work for this issue. There's like interagency teams. There's the website TahoeBears.org. What goes into you all working together to manage the land around this region, which is also two states, right? Because you have Nevada as well.
Exactly. This interagency team started before I was at the department, but basically there's multiple agencies that manage the whole basin, and we're all kind of trying to manage the same bears. So they got together as a group, and we meet monthly and create press releases, keep up with our website. And the idea is that there's one consistent messaging that the residents and tourists are receiving, so it's not confusing. There's so many people who are passionate about bears and want to provide information, but a lot of that information can be conflicting. So our thought was, if we have press releases and an website that has one message that we're all working on together, it's clear for the residents and visitors of the Tahoe Basin.
I think about the Tahoe Basin. Obviously, it spans two states. It's also a relatively small area when you take into account how many people visit Tahoe. It can get a million visitors or a quarter million visitors on a holiday weekend. I would imagine that makes it such a unique in terms of the challenges of curbing this issue of having these types of encounters, Alexia.
Yeah, the Tahoe, Lake Tahoe is quite large itself, but the basin, the land area is quite small, and we have a ton of visitors, like you said, that come every weekend. So educating those visitors every weekend is very challenging. And then there's a lot of residents as well, and new people coming in to live in the basins. It's such a beautiful area. So keeping up with that education is very challenging, and making sure that people are getting consistent messaging throughout their whole time in the basin is really important.
Yeah. Eric, you're a senior environmental scientist and you're a supervisor with Fish and Wildlife. I mean, your region is pretty large. It's 17 counties. Tell us about what you do.
Well, I supervise the Human Wildlife Conflict Program for the region. And so that's the staff that covers all 17 counties in our region. And that includes the Tahoe Basin, but it goes, you know, far beyond and includes all possible wildlife interactions that people can have. And I also supervise wildlife management staff who do research projects on game species and lands management as well. And so, yeah, there's plenty to do. And it keeps us busy.
What are some of the issues that arise when a bear becomes too habituated to its environment?
The big issues are, you know, the conflict with people, the comfort level that they can develop being around people. You know, anytime you've got a wild animal like that, getting comfortable being around people, and wildlife can be unpredictable in their behavior. And, you know, they tend to perceive things as, you know, they're hungry, they want some food. And, you know, bears are intelligent, strong animals, and they are creative in how they will try to get that food. We prefer them to stay in the wild and get wild sources of food. And so that's what we really focus on, is many different ways to deter bears and to work with people so that bears can just focus on getting wild food and not food associated with people.
Yeah. What recourse do you, the state, what does it have when it comes to dealing with problematic bears? And is there a definition of what a problem bear is?
Yeah, I might let Lexi add a little bit here, but we have biologists like Lexi that respond to these incidents, and they provide great information to the public on how to avoid conflict with bears. If there's some kind of an issue going on, then we do our very best to try to help the public implement preventive measures, you know, which could be things just like securing your trash can inside a garage with the door closed, and keeping the door closed, you know, keeping garbage and food away from animals like bears. We give people a lot of different advice on how they can do that. And, you know, we've got some really good experienced biologists like Lexi. And, you know, depending on the situation, you know, we have a bear policy that we follow for different levels of conflict issues. And so, you know, if it's needed, we'll, you know, we'll turn to those if it's getting more than just the bear is being persistent and not going away. Mm.
Alexia, yeah, I'd love for you to chime in since you're out in the field doing this work, and Eric, as well as other people at the state, lean on you to do it. What happens when it comes to kind of determining the level of problematic behavior with the bear?
Yeah, within our policy, it breaks down what is categorized as conflict bears. And so the first level is a no harm, no foul, where a bear shows up in an area kind of accidentally and wanders to a place it shouldn't be. It's not causing damage or showing any sort of threat. Example of this is every once in a while we get a bear that wanders into Davis, clearly not bear habitat, and so we have to capture it, move it back into the mountains. The next level is a general nuisance bear. This is a bear getting into your dumpster, you know, knocking over your trash cans, things like that. That kind of response is, you know, educating the landowner or the public, whoever was involved, on how to properly secure and manage their trash. And then after that, we kind of get into what we call habituated and food conditioned bears. And these are bears that no matter how much hazing you do, they're not very responsive. And hazing just means scaring this bear. We on the ground will haze with paintball guns and an air horn or bear spray if it's needed. But those bears who are habituated and food conditioned are basically unresponsive to that hazing. And then that's when it escalates to a point where it could get to a public safety situation if we feel this bear has become too habituated, too comfortable around people.
Mm. If you get into this situation at your own home and a bear gets into your house, Alexia, what should people do?
First of all, make sure you're not blocking an escape route for that bear. You know, bears don't want to hurt us, but they will if they need to, if they feel like they need to protect themselves and they feel threatened. So don't block that escape route. If it's a two-story house, go to a different level, close a door, and immediately call 911. Your local law enforcement are going to be your best options for help. But it's important to know that these bears are wild, and what they're capable of can be very scary.
Yeah. Eric, when it comes to, you know, a homeowner, if they're in this situation, what can a homeowner do to, if it gets to become dangerous, to defend themselves?
Well, if, you know, in a worst case situation, if a homeowner felt that they were in immediate danger of being hurt or attacked by the bear, you know, they can take action that's necessary to prevent that and protect themselves, protect family, even pets, and it even goes out into livestock. You know, other areas of our region, outside of the basin where, you know, people have chickens and things like that, goats, things like that, that the bears like to go after. You know, there's a provision in our state law that allows for homeowners to take action like that. You know, we don't like to see that happen, but it's there. It's an available option if people need to do that. You know, we prefer that if they can, they call us for help or call 911 if it's a public safety issue and let us try to help them with it. But those are their options.
Yeah. And luckily, those are rare. And the goal is to prevent that from even happening in the first place. When learning about things that can attract bears, is it as simple, Eric, as just kind of locking up your trash and keeping your doors and windows closed?
Well, it's, you know, in theory, yeah. If a bear can't get to what they want, whether it's trash or dog food or leftover stuff that's left over from a barbecue or something, if they can't get that and it's really secured, they will often move on. They will often move on because they're hungry and they're just looking for something to eat. And kind of the one thing they understand is if I can't get to that, then I, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else. You know, whether it's a structure that they can't get into, sometimes people use electric wire or what we call hot wire to protect chicken coops and things like that. Or even they'll even use that around houses or garages and things like that. And we also have, we're starting to use a program where we can loan out electrical charge mats that you lay on the ground in front of a door, an access area that a bear might use. They step on it, they'll get a shock. And a lot of times that can be an effective deterrent. And so, it's having the attractant so that one way or another, the bear can't get to them. A lot of times it solves the problem. Not every time, but a lot of times it does.
Hmm. Eric and Alexia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It's very informative. Alexia Roning is a Tahoe bear specialist, and Eric Kleinfelter is a senior environmental scientist and supervisor with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife North Central Region, which spans 17 counties. We've been talking about how to minimize negative or dangerous experiences with urbanized black bears. Still ahead, a groundbreaking research center at UC Davis is the first in the country dedicated to studying coffee. We'll learn more about the science behind this tasty brew. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.